Hey, it's Garen here. Inflation keeps rising. There won't be a better time than right now to replace the roof following the storm damage. Let the Shamrock team treat you to a free inspection and we'll replace the damage with the best roof at the best price. One call does it all at shamrockroofer.com.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. It's Friday, March 29th, 2024. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jay Gutierrez. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Today we'll talk to Stan Weber because it's Friday. Greg Gurley, Mike McFarland will have some postgame sound from the Royals opening season loss. Some basketball postgame as well. What a loser of a day.
Boss, you know we finally here, right?
Well, we...
It's Friday, then it's Saturday, Sunday.
Royals lose 4-1 to the Minnesota Twins. Then in the NCAA tournament, Iowa State lets me down. They lose to Illinois. Blech. I didn't care about Alabama or North Carolina, so.
Hey, your bracket's doing good, though, man.
No, it's not. Arizona's out.
You're one spot away from money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm screwed now. Arizona's out.
Not if UConn wins.
Well, UConn's going to win.
They look all right.
UConn's
all
okay.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
we're in this big money deal.
You're ahead of me. You're ahead of a lot of people.
I don't feel like
Jason Lebo.
I had Alabama going to the Elite Eight. I didn't have Clemson. I had Clemson out in the first round.
Clemson plus 7.5. Coach Donlin.
Clemson.
Yeah, that's the only team that I was rooting for that won was Clemson because of associate head coach Billy Donlin, who was on the show this week.
Yeah.
And if they make it to the Final Four, he'll be on the show next week.
Chase him down.
And look, if they got a shot, yeah. That's a surprise. Either Clemson or Alabama will be in the Final Four. Why not Clemson?
Go Clemson.
Get Billy Donlin in there.
That's right.
Man, Iowa State just came out of the gate slow. They could just—I mean, they never had a lead, right? They never had a lead. They just could never get over the hump. And Illinois holds them off, 72-69. Look, it's great. It's March Madness. It's this and it's that. But it's so stupid for them to start a game at 9:15. I mean, how late was that game on?
It was past 11.
I mean, that was well past 11. I mean, that was a fight to stay up to watch that game.
It's brutal.
And I stayed up and watched the whole game, but it's just like, if you're on the East Coast, how? You know, and like if you got any kids that are basketball fans, how you pulling that off? Unless they don't have school today. But it's just like, I mean, I feel like I'm a somewhat normal person. I get up earlier than most, but good God, I'm like, I want to watch this game. I want to watch the end of this game. But, I mean, I'm just fighting it here. That was tough to get through. I mean, it wasn't the most beautiful brand of basketball, but it was at least dramatic, and close. I wanted to watch it. So I was just fighting that. But, I mean, look, anything could happen. I guess Illinois could beat them, but... Right now, it almost kind of looks like last year, like nothing else is going to matter because UConn. I mean, they beat San Diego State by 30. They beat everyone by 20 and 30.
It's crazy.
They just beat the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
They won 6 games last year in the tournament to win the championship. And before last night, the first and second round games this year, and in those 6, in those 8 games, in those 8 tournament games, their average margin of victory is 22. And so then it went up. They won by 30. I've never seen anything like that. I really haven't.
It's silly.
Over 2 seasons, we're now, hey, you got the Elite Eight. And if they win that, you got the Final Four, and then you got the national championship game. For someone, I'm not even saying for someone to beat them. For someone to challenge them. For someone to compete with them. Someone do something. Well, we're not. I mean, whatever. I mean, I have them win into my bracket. Like Jake said, they'll give me some money. Okay. And maybe it's Purdue. You know, maybe we have to wait to the national championship game and we'll see this fabulous, you know, performance by Purdue or whoever they face. And then that'll be the time they're challenged. And we'll see some flaws. And it's like, I'm not interested. Well, they lost in the regular season. I don't care. Chiefs lost in the regular season. Guess what that meant? Guess what that meant? Nothing. It matters not. Especially when you're trying to stop this team from repeating. And so it's like we get all worked up about picking our brackets and looking at matchups and everything else. And for the last tournament and a half, it hasn't mattered. Because this is like, okay, UConn plays someone, they steamroll them, move on. And so, well, you know, hey, San Diego State, maybe they get. No. No.
Nope.
So now, hey Illinois. Now I wouldn't mind if it's another steamroll. I'm no fan of the Illini. But, I mean, just like the college basketball fan in me kind of wants me to see UConn tested. And maybe Terrence Shannon is so good, maybe he's the guy. When he dropped 29 last night. So, I mean,
while dealing with foul trouble.
But then again, maybe not.
Right.
Maybe UConn just wins that game by 16 and they move on. So you'll have, at least on that side of the bracket, somewhat of a surprise Elite Eight with a surprise entry into the Final Four, either Alabama or Clemson. And then UConn versus Illinois to see if there's a team that can do anything with UConn. Tonight should be some compelling games. I am looking forward to the games tonight. NC State and Marquette should be a fun watch. Gonzaga and Purdue should be terrific. Is Purdue, they have another chance to show that this is not going to be another March flop for them. And I kind of like the idea of Gonzaga going on this run when people have, you know.
Gonzags.
Well, this isn't normally, you know, this isn't as good of a Gonzaga team as you normally see. And maybe this is the team that, wouldn't this be funny if this was the team that finally won it all? They got on their championship. Probably not, but, you know, hey, they're alive and they look good. Duke and Houston feels like a battle of superpowers. Houston, please put us out of our misery. No more Duke. I don't want Duke. You know, Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns. I don't think it, I mean, does anyone that's not a Duke fan actually root for Duke in a game?
Certainly Duke is Duke. They're on TV more than Leave It to Beaver reruns.
I mean, you know, do they just like when you don't have a dog in the fight, does anyone ever just, you know, I like Duke to get some success here? No.
No. No, they're like Kansas in that regard.
Well, what's that supposed to mean?
Well, you've said it.
You root against Kansas?
You know? If you're not a Kansas fan, you root against Kansas.
I haven't
Kansas.
Said that.
Yes,
you
have.
You just said that. No, I haven't. I was talking about Duke. What do you got Kansas
you
on your
mind? You said that earlier this week.
I don't remember that.
Anyway, when you're really good.
6:15 a.m., Friday, March 29th. Nate compares Kansas to Duke as far as hatred.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, then.
I think they're pretty close.
Down here?
Kentucky, Kansas, Duke. I don't think anybody
North Carolina,
likes it.
Yeah, probably.
North Carolina.
People get sick of them. Nobody roots for Goliath unless they're Goliaths on.
I don't know if Kentucky's Goliath anymore. I think we've gotten our fill of them losing a lot.
But see, people still seem to like it.
Yeah. People do enjoy when Kentucky. Yeah.
I think that might be the coach.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, well.
And the fans.
Yeah.
The fans. I mean, you like. Yeah. You love watching a good meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like when Duke plays North Carolina, I don't know. I don't care. I don't have any.
It used to be more exciting.
Yeah, but also like, yeah, you're not really rooting for either one
right.
of them, right?
I don't like either one of them. Kentucky, yeah, you're right. I hope Houston wins. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
I like Kelvin Sampson, and I would like Houston to beat Duke.
I'm going to be in Houston tonight, so I'm hoping to find a spot where there's like, you know, a good Houston atmosphere.
You think so?
Watching the game.
I mean, it's got to be somewhere in that.
Yeah, my buddy of mine that I went to high school with lives down there, and he sent me a place. We're going to try to go watch the game. He said it'll be good. So he said people in Houston are fired up about it.
Why wouldn't they be?
Well, you know, it's hard. Houston's such a big town.
It's a weird city, man.
It's a weird town, and, you know, Houston's
the number one, baby.
I know. But how many people live in? I mean, there's so many more alums of like Texas A&M and things like that down in Houston. But
seems like a lot more Astro fans than anything down there.
A lot of Astro fans right now.
I think Houston's been good long enough now under Kelvin Sampson where they would have attracted the bandwagon jumper. You know, is there another Texas school that's really capturing the basketball fans' imagination?
I don't think so.
Baylor,
right? But I mean.
Oh, I was being facetious. I
especially like I don't know. I appreciate that style of play. I appreciate the way Kelvin Sampson's basketball teams play. That would be an easy bandwagon to jump on.
Grit, determination.
And then even now, they go into the Big 12 and kick the Big 12 in the ass.
Right.
You know, for all the people that wait till Houston gets to the Big 12, we're going to show them. And Houston said, "Show me what?
Show me that trophy."
Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, you were one of them. You said, wait till Houston gets here.
I didn't think they were going to run through it. I thought that, you know, it's one thing to post a great record when you're not getting tested game in, game out. They came in here, got tested game in, game out, and they passed the test with flying colors.
And maybe part of that is they had a coach that already understood what the assignment was.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't going to be surprised by anything. So, hey, look, that'll be an easy route for Houston over Duke. And then the game that I think will be the most entertaining, of course, 9:09, just to make sure that as few people as possible can watch it, Creighton and Tennessee. Go Creighton. You know? I love watching Creighton play. And I'm doing this just to attach myself to Gary Dieter at the hip. I love watching Creighton play. And I got good friends that went to Creighton. A man that lives in Omaha named Mark that I went to Pius with. Covey, the demands that we take phone calls. And I go, you know why we don't take phone calls, Mark?
Why?
I said, because I don't want to talk to people like you. That's why.
He's called in before.
Oh, I know he's called in before. He tries to get in.
Yeah.
And he has some real spicy hot takes.
I've talked to Covey
especially
before.
On Mondays after Chiefs games.
Well, you'll let me come on, Alt. I don't know if I'll set you guys straight. I said, I bet you will.
We could stand to be.
I've heard his takes in the lunchroom at St. Pius, and that's where I left him. That's one of my guys that was in my rotisserie league for all these years. Damn it.
What's he doing? Like, he's not playing either? He was a big time.
What's he doing? Not calling into the show from Omaha?
Not playing in any roto leagues?
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? He's a mysterious man. But anyway, like, you know, he's been a friend of mine for a long time. He graduated Creighton. Loves Creighton basketball. I'd like to see him be happy. I know some other people that I care about that went to Creighton. Phil almost went to Creighton. That was his third choice.
I have two cousins that went to Creighton.
So go Creighton. Yeah. And I really enjoy watching them play.
I mean, that's the last team that's closest to us. Midwest school. Jesuit school. Good Friday, you know, rooting for Creighton.
Oh, yeah, playing on Good Friday. Mm-hmm.
Could be a great Friday for them.
That's right.
Yeah, the late start is not great. I don't love the games being played at the exact same time as well. I guess it helps the people that work a 9-to-5, but, man, I'd like it if they were spread out more so you could watch them all.
I mean, it's all right on a Friday, but still, I mean, you think they'd stagger it a little more on a weekday? Last night was brutal.
Yeah, that was rough.
It doesn't help that was the most exciting game that we were all looking forward to as well.
Right.
I mean, if that was UConn last night kicking the crap.
Good night.
So it should be. Put UConn there because no one, you know.
Yeah, that game will be over by the first 5 minutes.
You just have to watch till halftime and you get the result.
Not even.
And also, the Royals lose to the Twins 4-1. But you could take some good things away from it. I mean, you could certainly look at the start from Cole Reagans and continue to be super excited about what he is capable of this year.
Mm-hmm.
6 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts. That's ace type stuff. That's number one type stuff. I know Boddicker was all pissed off about the number of strikeouts yesterday. 20 strikeouts, this sucks. You know?
Oh, when I saw that text, I was like, oh, so on brand.
But that was a battle yesterday of two of the best pitchers in the American League. And a battle between two teams that are in a mediocre division in the Central, and a battle between two teams that one of them is on paper better offensively. And that's why they're picked to win the division. You know, you heard Matt Quatrero in his comments into the intro in the show. You know, gotta find a way. Gotta find a way to scratch across more runs. You gotta find a way to give Cole Reagans more support. You know, the bullpen in a 2-1 game, gotta keep it at 2-1. Chris Stratton, one of the veteran guys they brought in to try to rebuild this bullpen. I know it didn't lose in the game, but you know, coming up into the bottom of the ninth, down 2-1 is much different than down 4-1. Takes all the wind out of the sails. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
2-1, you're a bad pitch away from tying the game. You know, one mistake away from tying the game. But then 4-1, it's like, ah, well, there it is. You know, that bullpen didn't do the job. Anderson did. Zerpa did. Stratton didn't. But one guy doesn't do his job, then the bullpen doesn't do the job. That's it. So, Cole Reagans was good enough. The bullpen was not. And the offense, remember how terrible the offense started last year? Let's not go through that again. It was great to see Michael Garcia lead things off with a home run. As you know, I've told you I believe he's on the cusp of a breakout season. And I know there have been people around here reluctant to include him, even last year, to say that he was a guy that the Royals should build around. Well, the Royals believe that. And I've told you that they consider their four untouchables. When people call and talk to them about trades, you don't ask about Bobby Witt Jr. You don't ask about Michael Garcia. You don't ask about Vinny Pasquantino. You don't ask about Cole Reagans. You can agree or disagree. That's how they feel. That's their nucleus. That's their untradeables. Those are the guys they have chosen to build around. The guy that's the fifth guy you would say that's on the – and I'm telling you how the Royals feel about this, not how I do, how the Royals feel. The fifth guy that's kind of teetering on that is Brady Singer. They like him. They want to build around him. They want him to be part of the future. But if he was part of a deal that got him something they really liked, they wouldn't say no to it. It would have to be a great deal. You see what I'm saying, the difference? So he's like, yeah, they like him. But they'd listen if it was the right kind of deal. And that's why I like the way the lineup's constructed. Garcia, Witt, Pasquantino. Those are the three position players that they want to build around, that they are building around. And then Cole Reagans on the mound. Everyone else is tradable. Everyone else is. Would they love MJ Melendez to have a fantastic year and show that he's a stud? Sure. But they had talks about trading MJ Melendez last year. He's been mentioned. I mean, Salvi, man. At this point, I don't, you know. I don't know if there's a trade partner out there. And you know what? I'm good with that. For better or for worse, that window was missed, you know, to move him for max value or good value. But he's clearly not. He's still a really good player, but he's on the downside. You know, this isn't ascending Salvi or peak Salvi. I don't know what they're going to get on Hunter Renfro. Michael Massey, they do love Michael Massey. He started the year on the IL, but he's got to prove it. He's got to show it. He's got to do it. Velasquez has a golden opportunity, a DH, to do something, but it shortened the leash to see what Nick Prado did in spring. And if Velasquez doesn't get off to a really, and they'll give him plenty of time. They'll give him a good shot to be productive in the DH spot. But let's say we're a month into this thing and Velasquez isn't hitting, and Nick Prado starts to tear things up and continues his hot spring at AAA. What do you think we're going to be talking about? You know, and that's what you want. You want hopefully Nick Prado pushes somebody. You know, and at least stays in the conversation. You know, and Kyle Isbell too. Same thing. He's got to show that he's the center fielder. If not, Drew Waters could put pressure on him. And again, that's not a bad thing. So, I love the top three. I hope Salvi can show that he's still got enough power. And I was going to say play discipline, but I'm not anticipating that. But we love Salvi, you know. But after that, there's a lot to prove between Melendez and Velasquez and Isbell and, you know, guy Massey when he gets back. A lot of guys that have golden opportunities to show they're part of this team moving forward. But yesterday, there was some good stuff to take away from it. The best thing is Cole Reagans looked like a stud. It's not his fault that the team didn't score enough runs. He pitched well enough to win. He had tremendous stuff. The striking out, the side swinging in the second inning was delicious. But, you know, you, Matt Quatrero with the obvious statement. You're not going to win a whole bunch of games when you score one run. So it is. Doesn't matter how good your starting pitcher is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so. That's it. Hey, Garcia had a good day at the plate. Bobby got on base a couple times, but didn't get anything from Vinny and Sal. It just... And I know Jakey pointed this out. Once that shadow starts to creep across the field, and the pitcher standing in the sunlight and the hitter standing in the shade, it's really, really hard to see that ball. So, and that works for both sides. That probably had something to do with the 20 strikeouts. But, hey, man, I'll say this. Minnesota Twins, Jake played it in the open. You get a great showing by Lewis to start the game, and then he pulls his quad. Rounded second base, and winning opening day is great, but losing one of your best players to a muscle injury right out of the chute is just that's be glad that didn't happen to anybody on the Royals.
Don't jinx things.
Knock on wood. But, I mean, be glad it didn't happen on opening day, because that seems like that happens a lot. Baseball is such a weird sport because you're standing around 95% of the time, and then all of a sudden you break into a sprint, and it seems like how many times you see a guy – does his hamstring or some kind of muscle injury in situations like that, and then they battle it because every time they try to come back, they re-aggravate it. It's just not the way you want to start off a season. So positive there for the Royals. That didn't happen to them.
Royals lose 4-1 to the Twins on opening day. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez, joined by Stan Weber in studio. Stan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Iowa State let me down. I'm mad. I wanted them to win, Stan. And I stayed up late to watch them lose.
Maybe sorry that's to hear
I'm
that.
Mad. Yeah. I don't know. I spend so much time surrounded by Iowa State fans during the Big 12 tournament, you know, because on the stage of the Fan Fest, it's almost like, I don't know, they leave a piece of them with me.
They adopted you.
Right. I mean, they were so good in the Big 12 tournament. I'm thinking, you know what, maybe this will be the year, the first Final Four since 1944 for Iowa State. And then this last night, man.
They don't go to the Final Four every year?
They missed so many layups and dunks, I stopped counting. How many, not I want to say easy, but how many shots that they normally make. I mean, it was there for them to win.
Easy. You can use the word easy.
And I was looking, I never seen a
alley-oop dunk probability turn into an air ball at a critical time, or the layup to tie when they're out in front
and hit nothing
by himself. I mean, it's just like you're totally jinxed.
Yeah.
What the heck? I mean, it's going to be hard to sleep at night. Those are the four of the easiest points ever. No defenders stopping them. Oh, the shot blocker. Nope, no shot blockers. They're out in front. That's four easy ones, and that's not the only ones.
And Illinois had a terrible time with the free throw line.
Oh, you know.
That game could have been put away earlier, but so.
When they got Shannon in foul trouble, he thought, okay, this is the opportunity right here. He went for 29 points in just 22 minutes of playing time. That's one of the things about the NCAA tournament to me. When you talk about like recipes for upsets and why the NBA, it's harder to pull off upsets, because in one game your best player gets in foul trouble and all of a sudden everything falls apart.
NBA has six fouls. You rarely get in foul trouble.
And
you play series.
Your guy gets in foul trouble and you lose that game. Well, we'll get him tomorrow. And that's why, like, when I saw that, I was like, this is what needs to happen for Iowa State right now. And then they stayed in the game, but they just couldn't take their opportunities. Too bad.
There's the yin and yang and everything. So, you know, don't want to upset anybody, but I was absolutely rooting for Illinois 100%.
Brad Underwood.
Absolutely. I know Brad so well, his family. Just amazing. Amazing family, amazing human being, and
I like him, but I don't like Illinois.
That's okay. You're a Mizzou guy too.
You know,
Mizzou guys don't like Illinois, and K-State people don't like Iowa State,
right?
That's
exactly right.
No, it's more about Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
On that
No, but it's hey.
What was the last time they made it to Final Four? 44.
1944.
Yeah.
So as a Kansas fan, do you not like Illinois or Iowa State more? Like, who did you want?
I was rooting for Iowa State. Just, you know, well,
there's
being
some history there
Big
with
12
Illinois
school. I don't really have any major feelings towards Illinois.
You have to be a Missouri fan to have any emotion about Illinois. They're just kind of a vanilla.
They just seem like
great coaches roll through there, but they never make you upset. Like, they're cocky or they're.
They strike me as the most underachieving major state school in the country in sports.
That was crazy to hear that they hadn't been to an Elite Eight in 19 years.
Yeah, I mean, like,
football. The only thing I think of when I think of Illinois football is them running from the. From the bragging rights game after they couldn't beat Missouri, so they decided to cancel the series.
But you just look at it and you go, okay, a state the size of Illinois with a city, you know, like Chicago in it, it's the only major state school that's in a Power 5 conference. Where else, in a league like the Big Ten, where else is there a state like that and the school just never seems to be great in anything?
There are a ton of state schools, not in any major conferences, but
right. There
are a ton of state. I mean, I don't know too many other states that have as many state schools as Illinois.
But they have the one that is the state school.
Everyone wants to go to Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like tough. I know it's tough academically and financially to get into, because I went to school with a bunch of guys at KU that were from Chicago that couldn't get into Illinois, or, you know.
He said that. I didn't.
I'm just saying.
Nobody
in Illinois that went to other schools likes Illinois.
This guy's an open book today. Earlier he said Kansas deserved to be hated like Duke around the nation. I'm like, okay. I mean,
I said they deserved
it. That's what you animated.
I didn't say they deserved
it. So I get it. I'm with
you. You earned it, Nate.
Yeah, they deserve it because of the
kind of like the Chiefs have earned being hated by everybody else in the NFL.
Yes.
Same thing.
I'm with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I do like Brad Underwood a lot. I love the story that Mike DeCourcy told us yesterday about when he was so frustrated with his team because they weren't executing what he had wanted during halftime adjustments. And after a second time out, he just called a timeout and stared at everybody and just didn't say a word until they started talking to each other. I don't know. I like him. He seems like a very easy coach to root for.
Yes, and Steven, if you forgot that it's Illinois for a second, you love the opportunity to see your kids grow up and your boys and be involved with them as grown-ups. How about his son as his offensive coordinator?
That's awesome.
On the bench, sitting right next to him, not just a GA, but an actual assistant coach. And I just, wow, my son Stanton grew up with him. I mean, those guys hung out together. They were ball boys together at K-State. When we went to Hawaii and K-State played there, those two guys were together the whole time, talking about everything. Can you imagine, you know, being 10 years old, 12 years old, and hanging out around K-State basketball on a trip to Hawaii? Let's go to the beach. No, let's go shoot some baskets. Let's talk. Yeah, what do you think about the NFL? The Chiefs ever going to get Patrick Mahomes? You know, they were just, it's so much fun to see the family, and his wife Susan's awesome, and it's a great story because he's a wealthy dude now, making tons of money, obviously, at Illinois, but it wasn't really that long ago, snap of the fingers, that he was getting almost nothing as a Florida junior college coach. They were so poor.
It wasn't too long ago.
Kids. I mean, they were. Mm-hmm.
That I sat in the conference room and took a cell phone call from him as he was asking me, he was fact-finding, he was asking me about the UMKC basketball program and the possibility of being the coach there, and just to get my thoughts about the program and the leadership at UMKC and what the possibilities were there if a coach took that job. In that conference room over there talking to Brad Underwood.
Yeah, no doubt.
Isn't that wild, though? I mean, talking to him, it felt like he wanted the job, and he was really, really wanting to know more about it. And I think about the list of the list of coaches that UMKC has considered and not pulled the trigger on, and that was one of them. But
yeah,
I mean, that's a meteoric rise.
Tracked his career, so the fact that it seems so natural now that he is just making tons of money, and I joke about it all the time. Even when he's an assistant coach, I go, "Look at you, man, Mr. Rich Guy," and he keeps telling me, "You know how much money I made 5 years ago?"
Hey, that gives you perspective. You know?
Yeah, and it wasn't like he was 22 years old. It's more like he's 33 years old or 35 years old and still poor as can be, wondering if he's going to make it in the coaching world, and now he's going to the Elite Eight with Illinois.
There's been a lot of interesting ties here with KU, K-State, and Illinois in basketball, with Lon Kruger being the coach,
tons.
Bill Self, mm-hmm. Bruce Weber, Brad Underwood.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it's even possible you could say those names
weird
together.
Kind of dynamic there.
I know.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about Illinois' success and saying, well, they did make the national championship game. That's Bruce Weber. Bill Self did some things there. Lon Kruger, I knew Lon so well. And when he went to Illinois, we actually went to Illinois. K-State played at Illinois, so I've done a game there. And Lon Kruger was the coach.
Hmm.
Like, whoa, this is...
Yeah, it seems so weird. There's a lot of good coaches that you just
listed. Yeah, with those big names, why haven't they...
But
had more winning.
Yeah. Nobody's really ever stayed there very long, it doesn't seem like, either. But maybe Brad Underwood's the guy. I mean, it seems like he's had maybe a better run of success. Well, how many years has he been there now? About five?
But he lost so early in a tournament. Was it last year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
7 years.
You know, so you say, oh, they're one of those teams.
Yeah.
Like Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another Big Ten school. Why don't you produce in a tournament? So this is big for him to go far. Always to get to the Elite Eight is a big deal for any coach. To get to that level is a big deal, but after they had no success earlier, just like Purdue, it'll be more relevant if Purdue wins tonight and moves on to the Elite Eight, because they've been so ugly in the early tournament experience in past years.
Well, if Underwood can pull off the upset against UConn, he becomes a legend. That's gonna be a tall order, but I'll be rooting for Illinois in that game.
Too bad it's not Alabama and Clemson split against Illinois and UConn.
Yeah, the last time they made the Elite Eight was 2005, before that 2001, before that 1989.
Wow.
And then you got the football schools who were powers for a while, Alabama and Clemson, going at it in basketball.
That's crazy.
And so we're rooting for Clemson because Billy Donlan's the associate head coach, and he's on the show this week, and he's awesome.
Great guy. Yeah.
Tell you what, it was awesome having him on, too, because he laid out the game plan, and then watching that game unfold, they executed it exactly the way he said they needed to. I thought that was actually really fun, because you could see
exactly what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, you knew what the game plan was. They executed it. They stuck with it, and it worked. It was like, I actually enjoyed watching the game that much more because Billy was so articulate in laying out exactly how they were going to have to win the game. And that's great coaching, too. I mean, I think that's one thing that, Stan, you talk a lot about with Bill Snyder, of showing the team a vision. Hey, this is how we're going to win this game. And making sure everybody believes that's how they're going to go about doing it. And then you go out and execute it. That, God, that's tremendous coaching. Really cool to see.
You know, I've talked to when he was at UMKC, I would talk to Billy Donlin about the Clemson head coach, Brad Brownell, because Billy had been there before under him. And they were talking about this in the studio after the game. That's an example of a guy that is stuck with the same school, has been there for a while, and all these, and you know, some of the Jay Wright, and they had Bruce Pearl. Did you guys watch any of Bruce Pearl in the studio?
I thought he was great.
He's really good. I like, you know, he can say whatever you want about Bruce Pearl and everything else, but it's a studio analyst, and Jay Wright's fantastic. Because there's some coaches and some studio analysts that you're like, why are they even in there?
Jay Wright's good.
Jay Wright was good, and I thought Bruce Pearl was really good talking about some of the different aspects of the game and why Clemson won. And he said, look, and you could tell that both those guys love him. Like, we're so happy for him because he's a grinder. He's been there since 2010. You know, everyone really respects him. But that's also a comment on the school, because it seems like he's always on the hot seat, right? And they've stuck with him. And how long? I mean, you know that doesn't happen anymore. You're talking about 14 years of that school with, I mean, he made a Sweet 16 back in 2017, 2018. And that's the only postseason success he's had. And then he finally breaks through and gets to the Elite Eight. There's a lot of schools that wouldn't have let him get this far and stay that long. So that's kind of a good comment about both coach and school being loyal to each other. And after a decade and a half, it pays off. And we don't see that anymore. That's just a rarity.
Their football coach tenure and men's basketball coach, boy, is there anybody in the country that's even close to that right now?
No.
Because they've got both their head coaches have been there a long time. And things are turning fast in that industry, and faster as the transfer portal allows for players to play immediately and not sit out. So no one says you're building for something in the future. It's like, next year, we better win. Next year, we got the NIL money.
That's right. But I'm glad Clemson won, and I'll root for them against Alabama for sure. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.
Obviously, very excited to be here in Boston. You felt like we handled business, took care of what we needed to take care of in Omaha. Two very good opponents. And, you know, and I thought, other than the start of the Moorhead game, I thought we played pretty well. Now it's on to a very, very good Iowa State team. Obviously,
And they took care of Iowa State. How about that? Now it's on to UConn. And that's a different animal.
Where will Nate value UConn if they win another championship in two in a row? Because there's a debate about should they be. When the conversation occurs, I don't hear their name. I hear Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky. Nate, do you include UConn when you make that statement? Blue bloods, is that what you call them?
I think they have to be considered a blue blood at this point. We had that debate a lot last year, and how many titles they have now? I mean, they got a bunch, and they've got them through different coaches. I think that's kind of a big thing. Like, I look at Villanova right now, and they've had good moments, but boy, Jay Wright leaves, and there's a huge drop off. UConn's a little bit interesting because they've had their ups and downs. They haven't just won year after year after year after year, but when they win at a high level, and they've done it with different coaches. So to me, I don't see how you can deny their blue blood status at this point. And I will say, as a Kansas fan, I'm kind of rooting against them. I don't want them to win another title.
That's appropriate. You should.
Yeah, I don't want them to win.
These are historic things happening.
Yeah, and I
since we turned the calendar to the 2000s, have they won the most championship of anybody?
And they won in 1999, 2004, 2011, 2014, and 2023. And give them a back-to-back in there.
Without 99, that's four, right? Has anybody else won four in...
Man.
And if you go 99, that's five, but that's not my question.
Yeah.
That's four with a chance for five.
The teams that have won multiple, I would think, Florida won a couple. North Carolina's won a couple, maybe three. And that North Carolina's probably won three in that stretch, my guess. Kansas has won two.
You're asking since 2000?
Since 2000, has anybody won more championships?
So after UConn won in 99, and see, Michigan State, we'll keep track, okay, do this math.
All right, all right.
In 2000, Michigan State, 2001, Duke, then Maryland, Syracuse, UConn, North Carolina, Florida went back-to-back, so there's two.
And the last back-to-back, right?
Yes. Kansas, North Carolina, so there's two for North Carolina. Duke, so there's two for Duke. UConn, Kentucky, Louisville, UConn, Duke, so there's three for Duke. Villanova, North Carolina, so there's three for North Carolina. Villanova, so there's two for Villanova. Virginia, COVID, Baylor, Kansas, so there's two for Kansas, and then UConn.
Yeah, so UConn's got the most. Duke and North Carolina with three. Kansas, Florida, Villanova with two.
Yeah, and then you just went with four?
Four UConn.
And you don't even count the 99, which would be five.
That's crazy.
Right.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Who's the dominant program in college basketball?
I mean, they've got, when it comes to national titles, it's them. And they are dominant right now. I mean, that's the thing is, like, the NCAA tournament, if you want to be upset-proof, just go beat everybody by 20. If you're that much better than everybody, then you can get one of your star players in foul trouble and still go win. You know, you were talking about blowouts, teams doing it back-to-back years. The closest thing I could think of was UNLV back in, like, 90-91, and they lost that game to Duke the second year, you know, in the Final Four. So, but and UNLV wasn't this dominant even, and they were pretty dominant.
All time, if UConn wins this year, they'll break a tie with Duke and Indiana because those schools have five. They would then tie North Carolina with six, and then the only two teams ahead of them would be UCLA with 11 and Kentucky with eight. Oh, but they're not a blue blood.
Was that a debate? There was a debate?
Oh, yeah, there was a debate. Oh,
really?
Yeah. We went through this all last year.
You don't like new members.
They're creating their own club.
Is this only 20th century blue bloods, not 21st century?
These other schools need to catch up to UConn. UConn doesn't have to prove anything.
UCLA off the charts in the 21st century. Let's take UCLA out and put UConn in as the greatest program.
Well,
you
they
guys
win
don't give
him
any respect.
Yeah, zero
you beat the hell out of
him
this year.
Yeah.
You beat
him.
I mean, yeah, it basically shows Kansas.
You beat
him.
Best team.
You're like Buffalo with these regular season wins now. This is what you're doing. You see that?
I feel like I just flatly said that UConn's a blue blood like a minute ago. I'm rooting against them because I don't want them to have more, even more
titles. You said it with tongue firmly in cheek.
Rooting against teams is just as passionate as rooting for. And you're rooting. You need to be rooting against UConn.
It ain't going to help.
You got three times.
Yeah. It ain't going to help. Rooting against
three games. You need one of those losses.
Come on, Brad Underwood.
You do not want another national championship on UConn's ledger.
But honestly, can they get, like I said earlier, before last night, if you factor in last year's tournament games and this year's tournament games, it's an average win margin of 22. And it went up last night because they won by 30.
Crazy.
I mean, can they just think if they do that. Like if they win the next three and they're all double-digit wins, then you got to talk about this two-year stretch. You can put that up with any two-year stretch of any college basketball team of all time. How dominant this is.
And they got the third-best Hurley running the show.
And he's pissed off right now.
His dad is famous. His brother's way more famous. And here he is dominating maybe 2 years in a row. It's three big wins away, though, Nate. Anything can happen.
He's going to get Alabama or Clemson, though, too, like in the Final Four, if he gets past Illinois. I mean, that's going to be an unfair fight.
I think it's going to end up who they play in the national championship game.
It's going to have to be
like
that.
It's Purdue. It's whoever it is. But, look, if that's the great thing about March Madness. Normally, is anything can happen, but for the last tournament and a half, nothing can happen when UConn plays except the blowout. We'll take a break back after this on WHB.